It's Friday, July 15, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today we're taking your calls with questions and comments. It's time now, of course, for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, after a spot of geek news, we're taking your calls with questions and comments. The phone numbers, take them down now, 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about 20 minutes. All right, welcome to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell, Miles Elam, Technical Trainer for Surf Control, and Drew Meyer, Storage Specialist at Adaptec. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
All right.
Good morning, Lyle.
All right, before we get into taking calls, which will happen in about 20 minutes, we're going to do some geek news, as we do every week. We're going to start with Mr. Miles. Hi.
Good morning. Google has won what's called a typo squatting dispute. There was
a typo squatting dispute?
Yes, there was an individual.
Big money in that?
This is an individual from St. Petersburg, Russia, had engaged in typo squatting, which is operating websites named, for example, Google with an H put on after the G, Google. Basically, when people fat finger typing into a URL.
Okay, so I'm misspelling a really common
like
domain.
Like yahoo.com.
But using it as a vector for injecting spyware, viruses, malware, so that when someone went there by accident, inject that code, maybe even redirect them to the actual Google site so that, you know, that they don't know that they made
right.
a mistake.
So basically, you're getting a lot of visitors and you get to do what you want with them.
Right.
Okay. So what's the case doing?
So this is basically awarding all of those websites, all those misspelling names to Google.
Wow.
And it's kind of a...
What do you mean awarding them all to Google?
All the domain names are now owned by Google.
How did that happen? Did Google buy them?
No, they were given...
No, this is...
The arbitration organization gave those names to Google. Because they most likely represented their name.
Right, the National Arbitration Forum. Legal alternative.
Okay, were they only misspellings of Google? Or were they also of like Yahoo and other companies?
No, this is specifically
Google's
site.
Okay, I got you. So Google sued the people that were doing this, and they won.
Or the one guy, actually.
And therefore those domains went to Google.
Yeah, actually, I guess they gave the guy a certain amount of time to respond. He's in Germany, and I guess one of his sites was giving malware.
No, it's not Germany. It's St. Petersburg, Russia.
Ah, Russia, that's right. Getting my stories mixed up. So he was in Russia, and they gave him a certain amount of time to respond because one of his sites was actually inserting malware in computers.
Right, and it's not that much of a problem if it's not doing that.
And he never responded. So I think they just took him away.
Interesting. It's kind of a scary thing. Then I mean, because when you're saying taking away, you're talking about a register deciding to point it to somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. You'd think that would have to be I don't know.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it, too. They have the businesses, for example, the idea that a business could just arbitrarily take your domain away. Say, for example, you just don't you missed that letter that came in the mail or something like that, to have it be taken away. And this type of thing has happened before.
Right. Well, and it's kind of common for a large company to come to a small register and say, you know, we really want to have that domain, and what are you going to give us for it? And have it to kind of, in the background, disappear from the owner. There's stories of that around as well. And, I mean, I have a misspelled word. It's not appropriate for radio that I use in a domain name, and theoretically that could be taken away from me.
But at the same time, you look at this and you could derive damages from that.
Right.
I mean, there is some liability there. You can argue that these are domain names that have been registered in bad faith.
Right.
You know, Miles, I don't know the whole story on this. I just read a little article about it last week. But it seems like a lot of people in other countries are getting a little upset that the Internet is primarily controlled by the U.S. And it seems like something was just recently passed that's going to continue for a long time.
Yeah. Well, there's also been a recent push for people giving control over to the UN for domain registration.
Really?
That makes sense, an international body.
Sure.
But then comes the question of, well, right now on the security panel of the UN, I believe the U.S. is still no longer on it, but countries like Syria are. Syria and China, I believe, both are. So it's a question of what happens when countries like that are in control of the domains, countries that have a human rights problem.
Issues.
Yeah.
Well, like the U.S. doesn't. But I get what you're saying. I mean, it's kind of interesting to figure out who's going to control, in a way, how people use the Internet. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's kind of I think it's a nonprofit organization, a U.S. nonprofit, that kind of...
It's ICANN.
ICANN. I think that's a nonprofit.
Although ICANN has issues of its own, but yeah.
There are quite a few issues about it. Very complicated process. We're talking basically about domain names, which are the first part of the URL, and they point to machines in the Internet. So without domain names working, the Internet doesn't work the way it works currently. So it's kind of a big deal. And, of course, anybody can buy a domain name. Most of the ones that are appealing are taken. So, for example, we have geekspeak.org, so no one else can have that.
I have a question. On this case, how do you determine where the misspelling ends and someone else's new name begins?
I think that's the part that's kind of scary. Yeah. I mean, I have friends that have, you know, because so many words are taken, they'll take a word and they'll change it, just slightly, put a number in it, because they want the word still to be associated with their domain, but somebody else has the main domain. But they're not in competition.
And where do you draw the line? I mean, Google's one of the world's, you know, number one brands right now, and it's like in the top five, I think. But, you know, what about the person who has the number 200 brand and somebody's doing the same thing to him?
Right.
Do you give him those names?
Right, like the radio station.
Just because they're close.
The radio show that's called Geek Squeak, right? I mean, where do you do
it? Or what if it's Geek Speak with two E's and it goes to, you know, a porn site?
Right.
What if
we tell everyone to go to GeekSpeak?
Yeah, I mean, how do we get that name?
Which is GeekSpeak.
In case you were confused.
In case you were confused. All right, let's go on to the next story. Thank you, Miles, for that.
That was a good one, Miles. Nice job.
Drew or Sean, what do you guys think?
Well, thank you, Drew.
Oh, yeah, it's always interesting to have a long discussion about that stuff.
I actually have something in the same vein, kind of.
Okay.
Oh, good.
A bipartisan group of senators introduced the Identity Theft Protection Act yesterday. It's a comprehensive identity theft legislation that's basically supposed to put the burden on preventing the increasingly common crime of businesses and organizations to collect personal information. It puts more of the burden on preventing that with the people who are actually doing it.
So the businesses will have more responsibility when collecting private information?
And it would give consumers more control over their personal data.
And even citizens more control over their personal data.
Do you know if this is the same one where they were saying that anyone that registered with the site, if the site got compromised, that they had to either phone or
contact them,
send a letter to the...
Yeah, that's actually a different piece of legislation
that
was introduced in the Senate Judiciary Committee about 2 weeks ago.
So what is this one?
It addresses some of the same issues, but in a more comprehensive way. And one of that is about notification to customers. This one doesn't seem to be... doing that as much.
It has more to do with how much data you should collect.
This one, the Identity Theft Protection Act introduced yesterday, addresses problems with recent high-profile data breaches, requiring people out there to collect sensitive data, such as Social Security numbers. That kind of seems to be what they're really focusing on.
Is it putting something in place? If you ask for this information, you have to do these steps. Is that the kind of idea behind it? You have to be this secure.
I think it's really putting the onus on the businesses to make sure that stuff is secure.
Okay.
And also, it's going to help prevent unauthorized parties from accessing private data, opening new accounts, and allows consumers to freeze their credit cards easier.
It's interesting. In a work environment, I work at UCSC, and we have a lot of accounts on different machines and stuff, and there's a central process in place that's been slow over the last 3 years of being up there that is basically getting to the point where there'll be one single sign-on for the entire business, if you will. It's a large business. There's thousands of people there, but it makes sense because then you do authentication through one system. And a lot of this information collecting has to do with there isn't a primary central system of that sort for the internet, for example, that everyone could use. So you end up having tons of accounts, and a lot of them actually have mailing addresses because you've ordered a book from some small company.
Well, yeah.
Internet commerce
is just huge right now, and so many people are using it. They've got to make sure it's safe and secure.
And I remember when Microsoft years ago released this idea of a passport, which was you sign up with them, and then other companies use that passport. It sounded so much like Big Brother that I was like, ugh. And I think a lot of people didn't adapt it.
Yeah.
And I think Apple's got something like that with the .Mac accounts. There's a lot of ability to kind of prove existence from it. And Microsoft does still have the passport thing. In fact, you have to make one of those accounts when you use their MSN Messenger.
Yeah, and Hotmail, yeah.
And Hotmail as well.
Yeah.
Because Hotmail's owned by Microsoft now.
Exactly. Same idea.
Yeah.
But it's slick. It makes sense. You have one login
across all
those pieces. Yeah.
Yeah. Businesses need to check that information more thoroughly and closely, especially after you have, you know, all these Visa cards, you know, these numbers being stolen.
Right.
Mine was one of them.
Was it stolen or just lost, John?
It was stolen.
And used by some
evil doer. Did you get a notification? Or?
Well, it was in part of those millions that were stolen, and I don't know if it was ever used. It wasn't used as far as I can tell.
Mm.
And my bank contacted me, and they canceled my card, send a new one. But kind of a pain, to have to go through all that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, thank you very much for that story.
Less painful than having somebody buy a...
Yeah, than stealing your information and using it.
Stealing information really bad, but if someone went ahead and bought like a $2,000 item off your card, you're only liable for a certain amount. Miles, you remember the figure on that? It's like $40 on a credit card you were liable for? No idea. Miles told me 1.3 years ago, so I just thought, I still remember.
Shouldn't have to pay anything
3 years from now. Yeah.
But somebody will pay it if the purchase was made.
Well,
so all of us will end up paying it, right?
Yeah, and it hurts the service in the end. You know, I wouldn't feel as good at, you know, buying or using my information online anymore.
Yeah.
And that would be, to me, the biggest loss.
Right.
You know, my freedom.
And it's scary when you think about consolidating identities and logons into networks. It makes it easier to use, but it also makes it much simpler to hack. Because if you lose that ID, if someone gets in, they've got access to everything.
Yeah.
All up front, all at once.
I mean, who here has more than 20 accounts online? I do.
Yeah,
I use more than 20 accounts. Easily.
I'm ashamed to say it, but I use the similar username and password as often as I can.
Me too. I have to. I just can't. I can't deal. I mean, I basically have like three levels of security. I have the password no one knows except for me. I have the one that my wife knows and I don't really care about, and it's the one that has like tons of free accounts, if you will.
Yeah.
And then there's one that's the throwaway one. You know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you've got to have to kind of have that duality. So if you get access to one of my accounts, you have access to all these free things of mine online, which...
You know, it's interesting.
Good to know, Lyle. I'll go...
Yeah. You know it probably, Miles. And that's the funny thing also. Is like, I know a password that Sean uses and that you use, Miles, every once in a while, the generic one.
Yeah.
It's interesting how that starts working.
And then I have Yahoo email accounts, mm-hmm. Gmail accounts,
uh-huh.
and MSN accounts.
Sure.
And I use them... I don't want things coming to my personal email. So I use those email accounts to register, newspapers,
absolutely.
That sort of thing, online
Please
information.
Spam me here, not
so,
anywhere else.
What's interesting is I fully expect those to get spammed at some point, but they never do.
Huh.
I'm actually very impressed with a lot of companies online.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
I think the best spam defense, though, right now is just Miles Elam, because we're still not getting any spam.
Yeah.
Thank you, Miles. You're still my hero.
I got one more.
You got one more? So
last week.
So in the 2 weeks that it's been on, you've gotten, what, 10?
Has it been 2 weeks?
I think so.
June 29th, so I don't remember.
What's the name of our show if listeners want to go back and understand Miles' genius?
We did talk about this on the first, July 1st
right.
show.
The Gray Listing Show.
The Gray Listing Show. Thank you.
How to defend.
I can now look at my PC Extremist account and look at Real Mail.
Yeah, that's true.
It's unheard of.
All right, Drew, let's go to you on news.
Well, I'm afraid this is rather hardware-centric and not nearly as intellectually stimulating, but Philips has pioneered a long-lasting LED street lamp. So... You know, I get excited about that. This street lamp will last... Well, if you've ever had a street lamp burn out near your house, you'll understand why this is exciting. Because it's dark without the street lamp in the middle of the night. So 50,000 light hours, the LED lamp does not have to be changed for 12 years when it runs for an average of 11 or 12 hours a day. So imagine the power savings because, first of all, it's LED, so it's
a
not converting energy into heat like regular lights do. And it's savings for the city or for the municipality because they don't have to send someone out for 12 years to change the streetlight. They never break, or they rarely break.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty interesting. LEDs are made of solid organic materials. They're smaller, they're more versatile, and they're less vulnerable than today's typical lamps that are filled with gases and they have a glass lens on them. The lamp life is usually limited by the pole. I don't know what they mean by that.
Probably with the duration that the... Like they have to replace light poles.
Oh,
as well.
The lifespan of the right when the pole is more likely to fall down or have to be moved in that 12-year span than
than the
lights have to be replaced.
Okay, that's
yeah.
cool. And why don't we have these in our homes? I guess it's kind of annoying.
Well, organic LEDs have just now come into the forefront in the last few years.
And I was reading an interesting a website the other day that said LEDs are great when you need spot lighting, like over a workbench or over a kitchen counter. But when you need ambient light in the room, they're too directed and they don't work very well. They don't create a lot of light waves that bounce around.
But I would have thought that optics would have been able to mitigate that.
You'd think they'd be able to do some optics to spread the beam a little bit. But you do see them mostly in kind of places where you need things direct, yeah.
LED street lamps are twice as expensive as current street lighting with similar design, but it's compensated by the longer lifespan. I said 50,000 hours for an LED lamp.
Yeah.
The current mercury vapor or gas lamp is about 12,000 hours.
So, yeah, you're going to buy more than two.
If you pay twice as much, you're going to...
And the installation cost, as you say, you know, it's going to cost man hours to get up there.
Yeah. So there's kind of like getting the compact fluorescent bulb as opposed to the incandescent bulb.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more expensive to begin with, but it lasts a lot longer.
And it uses less, cool.
I remember seeing the first time I saw a street bus with LEDs as their red lights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of notice it everywhere now.
The turn signals, I think, at that time weren't... Because they were orange and they maybe weren't used as much. But the red lights were because LED red is actually very inexpensive to make compared to the other colors.
Yeah, blue is the most expensive.
That's right.
It's the newest.
I thought white was the most expensive.
Blue is the latest.
A headlight.
They just made that.
To make white, they're just adding in
multiple
those to the red and the green.
Right. They've got multiple LEDs inside the chip, really small, close up, right? Okay. Fun.
Wow.
Another news story?
Maybe not so bad, huh?
Miles? News?
Actually, is it my turn or is it
it's Miles' turn. It's your turn.
Okay,
but,
sure.
But Sean's ready and he's got nice headphones. Let's let him go.
Yeah, mine's quick.
Yeah.
Yes, this week was the 10th anniversary of MP3.
Woohoo! 10 years.
Happy birthday, MP3.
Well, since you mentioned anniversary, I'm going to mention a couple. Well, first, yes, happy 10 years, MP3. Wonderful.
Which is the MPEG Layer 3 audio codec. Anyway.
We took over GeekSpeak 2 years after its conception. Mark Hanford and Chris Nicholson started GeekSpeak.
Of Cruzeo.
And about 2 years later, in I believe it was next month, August of 2000, I went on air for the first time as GeekSpeak host. And since then, I think all of you have been involved thoroughly. So we're celebrating of us doing the show, if you will, 5 years. The same year, and today, actually, of 2000, I married my wife, Daria, happily married for 5 years, 2 kids. And I just want to make a shout that every week I thank all the people participating in GeekSpeak that are on air, that are listening to the show, that are calling in, that are producing the show, that are helping with the show. And, of course, the geeks here, they're here all the time to make the show run. I thank all of you, and I thank the people that contribute to KSP. But I very rarely thank my wife, who allows me to be here every week. So, Daria, thank you very much for marrying me, and thank you very much for supporting me and doing GeekSpeak. All right, next news story.
Man,
no, wait, I'm not done.
You're not done with that? I interrupted
you. I'm not done.
That broke me up, man.
I'm tearing.
So, you know, as you just said, today's the 5th wedding anniversary for Lyle and Daria. A lot of people don't know, but Lyle married my wife, Maggie, and I. Maggie's the producer of the show. She's answering the phones. We've been married for, I guess, going on 10 years. Wow. And we're about to have our first baby in a few weeks, so it should be interesting. And also, Maggie and Daria have known each other for about 20 years. They go way back.
Wow.
And today, Daria asked me to read something for everybody. So.
Okay.
Lyle, you have made me one of the happiest people on earth. I don't say it often enough, but I love you beyond words. I feel so blessed to have you in my life, and I can't imagine what my life would be like without you. You in it. You have given me the best gifts anyone could ever desire, our children. Wyatt and Gwendolyn are amazing. They have enriched our lives beyond measure. Thanks for helping me bring them into this world. You are a terrific husband and the best father any kid could hope for. I look forward to spending the rest of my life with you.
Wow, man, that's fantastic.
Happy anniversary,
Lyle.
I wish people could see this. He's getting all misty.
You broke him up, but that's great.
All right, the next news story. Miles, quick, get something geeky on the air.
Fujitsu debuts bendable electronic paper.
What?
Yes, Fujitsu has announced a
codename
film
Gumby.
Substrate-based bendable color electronic paper. And it doesn't require a constant source of electricity to keep the information either.
You so wait, what is this used for? Why do I care?
To have the characteristics of paper. You can have electronic books that have something like paper. You can have foldable banners.
But the content can change?
Yes.
So I have a piece of paper in my hand, and instead of having 12 pieces, I have one that changes 12 times.
It's the last paper you ever have. Wow. Right. It's replaced. Now, what's the refresh rate and all that?
I'm sure it's horrible.
That's the thing. This is one of those situations that the paper is still readable even when it's powered down. So you power it, you set it, and then it stays lit. Or that's normally how it works. So there's pigment in the paper that turns, and you can actually see it, and it's like paper.
A mechanical.
Not foldable, but definitely bendable.
Yeah, I do have to say the screen resolution, or whatever you might want to call it, as I'm looking at it, looks kind of like a photo from, say, 20 years ago.
Right.
Where it's a little yellowed, it's a little faded, but it's better than what was there before, so far be it from me to complain.
Well, it's exciting. I mean, of course, in the sci-fi world, the paper display is just, you know, the end-all be-all. All right, thank you, Miles, for the paper input. We're going to do one more news story. I'm going to go ahead and welcome you to get in the queue if you'd like with geek questions and comments to us. We will answer any questions.
Miles had another cool one I saw over your shoulder earlier.
Okay.
Which one was that? So
the space.
Ah, yes.
So the phone number is right now to call us and ask us questions, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Miles, the space.
Yeah, this via Reuters. This
Final Frontier.
Yeah. Scientists have found a planet with three suns.
Oh, man, that's hot.
Yes, but it's calling into question some of the theories that people have had about the formation of planets being around a single sun.
Maybe suns come out of planets. Maybe we got it wrong all this year.
That's a parent planet.
But there are all sorts of parallels being drawn. People are talking about, oh, we found Tatooine.
Oh, because Tatooine.
That's right.
But it's apparently close to a Jupiter-sized planet, and then you have...
You know,
three stars.
I mean, I understand that. I understand that space is big and everything, but it seems to me that that is a pretty hard orbital pattern to exist in. I mean, you have to orbit three bodies, which of course are orbiting each other. I mean, nothing's standing still in space. So, that's complicated. You'd think at one point the planet just like, whoops, and went in.
Unless the planet is a giant space station and it moved into the galaxy.
I see. Or maybe the suns are orbiting perfectly in a equilateral triangle, and the planet's just in the exact center, and the gravitational pull is holding it there. That's
or maybe the other two suns came in.
I was thinking along the lines of you have a very large, very massive star, and then another star that isn't as massive.
So they're all orbiting that star,
right?
Equivalently.
Yeah, that would make sense.
All right. Well, we don't know because we're geeks and not space geeks, but we do know a lot about computers and internet and I don't know electronics and other geeky stuff. And you're welcome to give us a call.
The phone numbers and stuff.
And stuff. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. And of course, you can. You can also reach us via email. Just go to geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us, I think, and and you can send us an email. Let's see. Start with Promo Z. Let's do that.
See. All right. So the Monterey Bay Area Working Group of the California Clean Money Campaign will meet on Wednesday, July 20th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Aptos Library, 7695 Soquel Drive in Aptos. The meeting will begin with a showing of Bill Moyers' film, Road to Clean Elections. Information is available at 479-4769.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
This week on This American Life, movies for radio.
What makes you think that I want to film you so badly?
Like one of Jonathan's dad. He was not crazy about having people come over to the house. At one holiday dinner with a dozen guests, he decided that it was important to go fix a doorknob for 3 hours.
How come you have to fix it?
What happens when you mix the idea of home with the idea of movie? This week in Public Radio International.
How come you have so many doorknobs?
Sunday morning at 10 on KUSP.
This program...
There we go. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and Miles Elam. We are taking your calls and questions today. Anything you'd like to ask us, we might even be able to answer it. The phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can contact us by going to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. We'll get that through email and answer it online. We're going to go ahead and go to a call right now from
Ted in Felton.
Thank you, Sean. Hello, Ted. Welcome to Geek Speak. Ted?
Hello, Ted.
Oh, let me push the button.
Earth to Ted.
I'll push the button now. Hey, Ted.
Okay, I heard a loud noise. That means I'm on the air?
You're on the air.
Okay, great. I have a website that I'm responsible for, and up till now I've just been producing content for it, but it appears that I'm going to have to take over the management of the site. And I don't know HTML, really, although I've looked at it on the screen. And so I need a piece of software that isn't terribly expensive, but will allow me to paste in graphics and text and remove sections of the site, do general updates to the site. And I'd like some. I use a Mac G5 running a current operating system. And I'd like to find a piece of software that doesn't cost me $650, but would allow me to do fairly, at least, you know, sort of a simple cut and paste type operations to keep the site updated.
So what you need is a WYSIWYG.
Whatever you say, man.
What you see is what you get.
Yeah, WYSIWYG is an abbreviation for what you see is what you get.
Yeah. I see, yeah, right. That would be, I mean, I don't really have the time and inclination to learn HTML.
Right, so you want to be able to look at the code, but then click another button and see what the code looks like to everybody else.
So
and then maybe even work in that
work in regular speak instead of HTML.
Okay, one advantage for things like Dreamweaver is that they have templates. So they can make a website, but if you already have an idea of what you want the website
The website has been in existence for some time now, and
then
someone else constructed it.
Then I have the perfect answer for you.
Okay.
www.nvu.com.
NVU?
Nancy Victor Unicorn?
Yes.
What is that?
That is a WYSIWYG editor for web pages. Exactly what you were asking for, and it's free.
And does it run on OS X?
And it runs on OS X.
Wow.
Have you tried it, Miles?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, we're looking at the site, and you can download it right there. Hey, how did you maintain the site before the previous?
Well, I didn't. See, I someone else built the site. I supplied all the content in the form of like JPEGs and Word files and so on, and PDFs, and the site was constructed for me. So I don't know diddly about how to assemble a website.
This thing looks really cool, Miles.
It looks really good.
Now, there is the question of how you get the information up to the site. Do you know what method they use, if it's FTP or if it's...
Yeah, that's another thing. I need the software or another piece of software. I mean, I know the code, the access code, because, you know, I'm a...
The password and the login.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So it's probably through FTP. That's the more common one at this point.
And I use WinSCP, which has
file
FTP
transfer
support.
File transfer protocol, right?
But he's on Mac.
Exactly.
So I have some more good news for you.
Right.
NVU actually supports publishing over FTP. It's fairly seamless. You press a publish button, and as long as you have set it up to put in the FTP address... the actual name of the server, then it should be fairly seamless for you.
So a big feature that I recommend highly paradigm to use is you get a copy of the entire site locally. You edit that. When you're happy with what you like on your machine locally, then you publish it up to the site. So you don't do that, it starts getting kind of messy.
In other words, pull the site down, put it in your computer, edit the site in the computer, and then repost the entire site back up.
Not the whole entire site, just the pages you edit.
The page that has a specific address, right?
Right.
Okay. Yes.
You're going to have to get familiar with your URL space.
Right. Each page has a URL address that looks like a separate web page or something like that.
So what Lyle's recommending is make a copy of, or just copy all the pages from the website down to your machine, and then the website will continue to run as is, and then you can tinker on your machine as much as you like.
Without damaging the site itself.
Nobody will know the difference except for you.
And then once you've made the changes you want, you know, you, the site is ready, then you push the pages back up to the real site.
This now, is a free piece of software really going to make this as easy as something I might pay a few $100 for?
Yes.
It looks like you should really give this a try first.
You'll be amazed. You'll be good at this. It'll be fun. It'll be good for you to know, and enough already. You'll be fine.
The first sentence on the site says, a complete web authoring system for Linux desktop users as well as Microsoft Windows and Macintosh users to rival programs like FrontPage and Dreamweaver.
Well, there is a caveat to that, and like I said, that has to do with templates. You already have a website, so that's not going to be a big deal. It's the question of a lot of times people want to have a piece of software that will get them started on a design idea, and this won't help you with that.
And let me be really clear about Dreamweaver. Dreamweaver is a pretty great application.
It's industry standard.
It's an industry standard, but it's got some features in it that you will never use in the situation you're in, like
and
templates, Miles saying, but also things like lots of people authoring at the same time, managing of different accounts and different groups, if you will, many different parts of the site. There's a lot of complexity that's built in the application that adds some features that are essential when you've got more than like two developers working on a site. But in your situation, you got one person, you just want to make sure it looks, you want to be able to change the content of the site, this is pretty set.
For what you're describing, using this Dreamweaver is not going to be any easier.
I think it may be
a lot more expensive, too.
The other thing is, depending on how much time you want to commit to this, there are some great classes at, you're in Felton, so close would be for Cabrillo College. There's some great classes to do this kind of work, to learn HTML, if you will. Because even though you're going to do WYSIWYG, and even though you're going to be doing this, there's still some paradigms you have to really understand, like where your images are and how you reference images from different locations, because it'll get complicated for you. You'll add an image to the site, but you'll have to add it to a folder as well. You have to link it to the image into there, and then you have to make sure that the image goes up when you upload. So there's some complexity about web development that exists inherently. And there's ways to get around that, but in your situation, I think the best bet is to go ahead and pick this up, start working with it, and when you get frustrated, realize that a class would really be wonderful.
Hey, do you mind sharing your site with us, Ted, so we can go take a look and get a free promo here?
It's just us and, like, most of California, so
okay.
Don't worry about that.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much for the
sure.
call.
Thanks for the invite.
Good luck.
All right, we're going to go ahead and go to Hollister. Lucia, welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I have two questions, not related to each other.
Are they related to technology?
Yes.
Oh, you're in luck.
One of them has to do with my internet connection. Right now, I have dial-up, and for the longest time, that's all that's been available in Hollister. But there's a company that offers broadband, and the owner says that it's much faster than dial-up, and I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Night and day.
Do any of us disagree with that?
It would be like your all your life you have been crawling and then you stood up.
Oh.
Yeah. You have an 86 Pinto and someone wants to sell you a new car that actually has a V6 in it.
I think it's more than that.
You have a unicycle.
I get the message.
I'd give up my telephone and my TV.
Yes, I would too.
But then, you know, remember who you're talking to. So.
Okay.
You have a hard time going wrong here, Lucia.
I'll make the switch. Thank you.
Right.
My second question is, I recently bought a camcorder, Sony, but I didn't buy the editing software, and then I didn't think about all these little mini cassettes. You know, I don't want to have my house filled with them. So I was thinking about editing them and saving them onto DVDs, but I don't have the software. And I was wondering if you could tell me, you know, recommend something.
Do you have a DVD burner?
I haven't installed it.
Oh, but you own one?
No, actually, it's a CD rewriter.
Okay. You have a way to make CDs, though.
I'm sorry?
You have a way to make CDs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that means you couldn't make DVDs with your system.
Not right now, huh?
The reason I ask is lots of times if you get a computer that has a DVD burner, there's going to be some baseline application to edit movies. So that's one part of it.
And not always. Actually, a lot of them nowadays are bare drives.
Bare drive. Oh, no, if you buy the drive to upgrade, then, it's not going to come with anything. Are you on a Mac or Windows machine?
Windows.
All right. Well, good apps for editing movies and such. I think the Sony line is good.
I like Nero.
Use Nero for editing video?
Does Nero do video? I thought it was just...
It does have some video editing capabilities, but, you probably better... Okay, so if you really want a good piece of software, Sony.
So
it used to be Vegas Video, right?
Right, right. What is it? The Sony
Sonic
calling
Foundry?
It?
Foundry.
Yeah, Sonic Foundry.
That's who used to own it. Then Sony bought them, and now it's just Sony Vegas. I think
Sony
is what it's
Vegas?
Called. Yeah,
like Las Vegas.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
And they basically the SoundForge line is the high end line. That's for sound editing. And the Vegas Video Five, I think it is.
Yeah.
Is the high end video editing. But this is, you know, this is gonna be kind
pricey.
Of expensive.
Yeah.
And pricey.
This won't be as pricey as like Adobe Premiere 1.5 Pro.
Right,
know.
Right.
I think there is now a cheaper version of Premiere.
Now, wait a minute. Lucy, you said you had a Windows machine?
I do.
Is it XP?
No, we have a Windows 98.
Oh, okay. I think XP, I'm pretty sure, comes with a basic version of video editing software. But if you're on 98, I don't
really,
know.
Really? I don't remember ever seeing that.
Wait a minute. I've used it, so, and I didn't pay anything for it, I'll tell you that.
What world are you in? No, I don't know it, but you've used it.
Okay, next week I'll tell you guys what the name is and where I got it.
Maybe if you brought your laptop to the show, we'd know.
Ooh. Lucy, I'm sorry. I'm of no use in this situation.
No, but there, we did...
I recall something like that, too. But, you know, I'm looking at my computer. I don't see it.
I'm kind of teasing Drew. I can't recall what it is either. But there is... Sean and I have both seen some product out of Sony, and this is bad because, of course, we get products sometime of this nature that is basically simple video editing and movie making. And I am looking for the memory of it online on my computer because, of course, I have no memory of it.
Does Adobe have nothing similar that you can download and check out for free or a thin version?
Right now I have Adobe Photoshop Deluxe, the Business Edition 1.0.
Uh-huh.
That's just for photos?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lucia, send an email to the Geeks.
Okay.
Go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and you'll see an interface there. Send us an email. And we'll dig that up and send that to you.
Yeah, actually on the website, click on the button, contact us. It's on the front page.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll do that. And, you know, if it's something that I can do through my TV, like I can buy
a TV out thing,
a DVD upgrade or do something through my computer, for me, whatever is easier.
This is a complicated question because with CDs, you can make, like, video CD versions of it. It would be a lower quality or shorter movie than what you could have on a DVD player.
Oh, uh-huh.
Although DVD burners nowadays are running, I mean, are not that expensive anymore.
Right.
So you're either going to spend a little bit of money or you're going to have a fair amount more complexity. So.
Yeah, I don't mind spending a little bit of money, you know, if it's going to be something that's going to be around for a while and then
right.
Is it going to take me...
Go ahead and send us an email because I think it'd be nice if we had spent some time research to really get the right thing for you in this situation.
Okay, thank you so much.
You want to consider your storage needs too, Lucia.
Oh, okay, yeah. I have a 256 RAM, and it says that I have 7,000.
Your machine's going to edit video pretty slow, by the way.
Yeah, a 98 machine with 256 megs will be, you know, okay, but. You're gonna as you create all this stuff, your disk space is gonna shrink pretty dramatically.
Mm.
So we'll keep that in mind.
We'll address that in email as well. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye bye.
Bye.
All right, I am getting to our next call because we've got a lot of people waiting. Los Obos, and we got
Los Osos. Ron.
Los Osos. Sorry about that. Ron, hi, welcome.
Hello. Yes, this is Ron from Los Osos.
Hey,
welcome,
thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Hey. I have a Kyocera smartphone, and I want to know if I could download it onto
if you can sync with...
Yeah, I guess it's called a hot sync, and I want to do it to a Mac if I could. Is that possible? I've heard conflicting stories from
Verizon.
Have you
been to Kyocera.com?
Yeah, they said I could, and Verizon said they don't support it.
What's the model of the phone?
7135.
Yeah, where's John Tracy when you need him?
I know.
He has a Kyocera phone that has a Palm interface.
Yeah. And yours has got Palm?
I think it's running the Palm OS, right?
If it's Palm OS, yeah, you can stick to a Mac.
Yeah. It's.
Okay, yeah, you can definitely stick it to a Mac if you've got Palm OS. You're running OS 10 on your Macintosh?
Well, that's it. You know, I'm in a transition here. I have an older Mac that I don't want to upgrade.
Okay. All right, so what you do is you go to Google or you go to Palm's site.
PalmSource.com.
PalmSource.com. And thanks, Sean.
Yep.
And you go ahead and download Palm Desktop. No, Palm Desktop. Well,
you need two pieces of software. One of them runs on the machine It's called the, like Lyle said, the Palm desktop. And then the application or the utility that connects between the Palm desktop and your telephone is called Hot Sync.
And are you running OS 9 on your Mac? It's an old Mac.
Well, that's
actually good in some ways because you don't have to deal with Apple's solution of iSync, which means you've got to plug in a special plugin and such. You know who would also be great on this discussion right now is our geek that just worked at Palm Source recently. He would know a lot about it as well. But I think that does make sense. Go to Palm Source and download both these applications, the Palm Desktop and Palm Hot Sync.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think the Hot Sync is already in the smartphone.
You need it on the other end of the line there.
Yeah.
The computer has to be able to listen to the phone. That's what that Hot Sync
is. Yeah, so I have to get Hot Sync into the Mac.
These are free downloads.
This is not unusual. And the Kyocera site should walk you through this pretty well. At least they should have the software that originally shipped with your phone. They should have an admin guide that tells you how to do it.
Yeah. Do you have the software that originally shipped to your machine, your phone?
All they did was supply me what came with the phone. They didn't
have a CD with the phone?
Because
the phone is, since it's a Palm phone.
It's a Palm Pilot with a
button. Free software, basically.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff to do the syncing on it.
Yeah.
It looks like a Palm device from your computer's perspective.
Yeah.
I think going to palmsource.com, and maybe it might be just, it might not be Palm Source, it might be the other company, Palm One, because Palm is actually two companies now,
really?
That actually has the product that you need to.
Yeah.
But that's the way to go, and you're going to find it. It's not going to be that difficult.
Yeah, it sounded like Kyocera said, yeah, we can do it, and here's a couple of ways of doing it. And then I talked to Verizon, who supplies the phone.
I wouldn't pay any attention to what Verizon tells you about that phone.
Yeah, this is not going to be like a phone call type of thing. This is a Palm device talking
about
computer.
Yeah, well, they sent me to their Palm experts.
Mm-hmm. And they said no?
And they said no, they're a PC. We only support the PC.
Right, they're not going to help
you. They're washing their hands of you.
But Palm definitely syncs to Macintosh.
They're washing their hands. All right.
Yeah, it's useless.
They're washing their palms with you. Sean's got no. Okay. Thank you very much
for
the call.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care.
Let's go to line one real quick. Grayson from Santa Cruz says there is free digital video editing software.
Grayson, thank you for calling and helping us out. What's up?
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Grayson.
Hi, Grayson.
How you doing? Yeah, there's a site called betanews.com.
Betanews.com.
Betanews.com, yeah, and you can get thousands and thousands of free apps there that are all, most of them are really prime because they're filtered out. You know, they check them, see if they work, right?
Cool.
Sure. Looks like a lot of this is the express version or, you know, the trial version, that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of shareware, but the freeware is, most of it is full version.
Oh really? Sure.
Yeah, they have share and free. As they released like a version of a beta version of QuickTime Pro there.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, they're collecting all these apps that you can use to edit.
So Lucia, if you're still listening, for your DV editing software needs, you might want to check out betanews.com. At least maybe you can find a piece of software, even if it's not free, that you like and you could feel good about buying.
Grayson, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of other free software.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Actually, really interesting site.
Very interesting.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks. We're going to shoot off to Big Sur now. Jim, welcome, and thanks for waiting so long.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I sent you guys an email on these questions, but I didn't get a response yet. And now I understand why. You're in wedded bliss, domestic bliss there. So you haven't had a chance to answer. But here are my questions.
All right.
I'm finally at the point where I'm going to see if I can sell some of my photography online. And I'm looking for software that will allow me to design and maintain a website for selling photography, but it's got to be very user-friendly, powerful, but not impenetrable, you know?
I saw this email. I have no idea. Lyle?
You're asking for a couple of different solutions all wrapped up in one package.
I saw this email. I have no idea. I like that, Sean.
I saw the email.
I was going to reply, but Lyle is our photography expert.
I'm the web photography expert. You'd think that I would know how to do this. Okay, selling photography, first off, is how do you sell it? How do you show it and sell it at the same time? You're basically selling copyright because you're going to show the images online. Is that the idea? or, you know, watermark the images so there's some, it's unusable?
Or make really small versions of the images, maybe.
Yeah,
or
do you small have a, versions of the images.
Do you have a very specific clientele that you know you want to target? Are you a professional photographer?
Well, I have been on and off. I've used photography in my work, and I've been doing photography for 30 years.
And you've got all these pictures, and you want to start putting them up and hopefully find
people
buying them.
Yeah, I'm back into it, and I'm thinking, geez, I'm taking all these pictures, and some of them are really good. Let me see if I can recoup a little.
You know, I got to say, working for many large companies in marketing, so there are a lot of times where I need to get royalty-free stock photography.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of pricey to get the high resolution stuff. So people like me do look for this kind of artwork.
Right.
And there are sites out there that you can sell your artwork to.
Are firms that handle everything for you.
Yeah.
And also take a cut.
Yeah. And have you thought about using them?
I have, and I will be looking into them in more depth, but I'm also very seriously thinking about just running my own site.
That might be the way to go.
Try this. Go to Yahoo's website, because you're going to need a bunch of different things. You need a website editor, you're going to need an e-commerce front page, and something to do an engine on the back of it, and you're also going to need a way to manage your inventory. A lot of different things all wrapped up into this business of selling stuff over the internet, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to become an expert in each one of those or figure it all out. So Yahoo has a pretty good e-commerce site builder.
I'm sorry, say that. Where should I go again?
Yahoo.com.
Oh, Yahoo.
And they'll, this is fee-based, but they'll be able to put together, they'll give you all the tools to do the web editing and the inventory management and the e-commerce. You can get set up with PayPal to take credit cards. It might be a good place for you to start exploring how to do all this very simply.
So I go to Yahoo.com, and then I go to...
There'll be an e-commerce section or the...
Oh, e-commerce section.
I believe that's right. It's not in front of me right now.
I'll check that out.
It would give you a sample, a feel for what it would be like to do it on your own.
Okay.
And it's economical.
Great.
It's designed for the small business owner who's just getting into it.
Perfect. The other thing I'm looking for is software for photo enhancing in preparation for printing, high-quality photos.
How about betanews.com?
No, for photos, Adobe Photoshop.
But that's expensive.
It is, but it's the application you use for editing photos.
That's
so,
true, too.
So, Photoshop. What is it, the latest, CS2?
CS2, yeah. It's going to cost you quite a bit of money. But it's definitely, I mean, if you're editing photos, it's the way to go. If you want to spend a lot less and still get a lot of the features but not be nearly as happy, you can get a lighter version of it, which is Photoshop Elements. But I got to say that it's not up to par with Photoshop in any way.
Okay, that's good advice, good information. I'm not a computer genius, but, I'll be able to pick that up. I mean, make sense out of it?
I think so. It was originally designed for photographers to use.
Okay.
So it's slowly migrated to people that have much more technical skill set, but it still has the Dodge and Burn
software.
It still has some stuff that's like a dark room.
So, Jim, that website is smallbusiness.yahoo.com.
Thank you, Sean, for finding that. Smallbusiness.yahoo.com.
If you go to the front page, and there's a small business section at yahoo.com. You click that or click sell online on the front page. It'll take you right there.
Okay, now I'm going to leave you with one last rhetorical question. Why does ICAM allow people to get control of website names that inherently already belong to some other agency or organization?
But inherently is the whole discussion. They don't. If the way ICANN works, you register a specific sequence of characters, and that's yours, and anything similar to that belongs to anybody else.
Well, for instance, if I look up OregonShakespeareFestival.com, somebody else has that. Oregon Shakespeare Festival has to use a different URL.
It's tough, isn't it?
But
that's called squatting.
Oregon's a big state, and theoretically there could be another festival in Oregon.
They're not using it for that.
Basically, I just don't think it's right.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
You know, for many years, WhiteHouse.com went to a porn site. WhiteHouse.gov was the real site for the White House.
Although that's no longer the case
anymore.
That's
changed, but yeah.
As a matter of fact, in my office before I retired, my secretary was trying to go to the White House, and she said, "Wow, what's this?"
Exactly. Yeah.
That was quite interesting. Okay, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
difficult issue.
Definitely. I think one recommendation I have, there's a lot of software out there to do a lot of things, like video editing, stuff like that. They all emulate each other and stuff. In the photo world, if you want to edit photos, you learn Photoshop, and you pay for it.
And you'll never use anything else
again, because there'll never be anything better. Well, maybe someday they will
be. Photoshop has light versions, too, so you don't have to take the
plunge. There are, but they went to Elements, and Elements is like this whole package, and it's trying to compete with like iPhoto on the Mac, and it's not like a Photoshop application. Okay, Walter from UCSC, it's like I'm working early today. What's up?
Walter, are you there?
You still there? Oh, you know what? Let me turn his mic up so that we can hear him. Hey, Walter, sorry about that. Go ahead. What's up?
Hi, I'm trying to put on a PowerPoint presentation, and the problem I'm having, it's on a compact Presario R3000 XP, and all I get is the wallpaper showing on the projector.
Okay.
Oh. So you are getting the computer to project onto the projector.
Right. I eventually found out about control panel display settings and got two displays on.
Oh, you did it that way.
So you're
doing this off a desktop or notebook?
Notebook.
A notebook, you can just hit the function key and then the monitor key. And then what you do is you transfer your desktop monitor to your RGB port off the back of the notebook, and then...
That's as easy as that.
Okay, it really is that easy. Okay. So what you've done, I know exactly what you've done. You've created two desktops. You've got one side by side. What you need to do is
onto the right one.
You need to grab your PowerPoint presentation and drag it off the side of the screen, and then you'll see it appear on the projector.
It'll slide into view on the projector.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you've got two separate desktops going. What I recommend doing is go back into display settings in control panel.
Right.
Just go back to using one desktop. And then on your notebook, kind of down in the bottom left-hand corner where the control and alt keys are, there's a grayed FN key, which is your function key.
Right.
When you press that key down, all your function keys across the top have little icons for volume.
Like secondary printing.
Secondary keys. And what you want to do is hit the one with the picture of the monitor. And what that would do is turn off your monitor on your notebook and transfer that to your external monitor port that you have the projector plugged into, and then you will see it on the screen.
But then I'll have nothing on the laptop.
If you toggle it one more time,
you'll have both.
Oh, okay. And they both be the same?
Yes.
Yeah, identical.
Which is probably what you want,
That's what you want.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
Okay, great.
And, yeah. Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Call.
Bye.
That was great, Sean. I know how to do that on Mac, but I never remember how to do that on Windows.
Function keys are the biggest mystery because they're not standardized.
I use them all the time to raise the volume of my notebook, to monitor brightness. They're very powerful.
But if they're not standard.
It could be
the number 6 on one machine and number 3 on another.
That's why you got to look at the icons. Exactly.
All right. We got a call from Santa Cruz. John, let's make it quick. What's your question?
Hi. I have a very quick question. I'm looking for a driver for a Global Village PowerPort Platinum Pro card.
Holy smokes. Does that give you a Global Village? What does that do?
it gives my extremely old PowerBook 1400 Ethernet access.
Yeah.
This is a network
besides
driver.
The Global Fax thing, which I'm not interested in. And the drivers on the Global Village website, they don't really have drivers for this card on their website. They have firmware updates and so forth.
Mm.
An email to their support gives me back a form email that they're not supporting old stuff because they were purchased by this company and then that company. And I've done searches on Google, and this seems to be a problem.
Yeah, are you running OS 9 or OS 7 or what?
Well, on this thing, it's an OS 8.6.
Oh, 8.6.
But regardless, no drivers can be found for this card online.
No, I know.
And there is an 8.6 and 9 driver for it.
Where did you get the card?
From eBay, from somebody who apparently doesn't have the driver. And I just realized to this that it would be a problem when I tried to find the driver. I'd never had trouble finding drivers.
What you might want to do is go on eBay again and find people that are selling the same thing and call and email one of them and say, can you please help me with the drivers because of this problem I have, and see if they help you out. That's what the best bet is because no one's going to have this, I don't think.
That is tough. Have them post the drivers if they have them.
Yeah, I thought maybe if somebody out there was listening and had one, they could let us know.
Again, let's give us the name of it again.
It's a Global Village PowerPort Platinum Pro.
If you've got drivers for that,
PowerPort Platinum Pro.
Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Good luck.
You're listening to Geek Speak. The Geeks this morning were Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Drew Meyer. Community Alliance with Family Farmers provided a grant for this program, buying fresh and local produce from farmers, markets, CSAs, retailers, and restaurants. Supports the local economy. For information about the Buy Fresh, Buy Local campaign, 761-8507 or online at caff.org. As I said, the geeks were Drew, Miles, and Sean. They are here the whole hour to help us out with all the technical dilemmas. My name is Lyle Troxell. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, and also answering the phone today was Maggie. I want to thank you all for the participation in GeekSpeak today.
Thank you, Lyle. It's great being here.
To those that listened and called, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without us, without you, it would just be us geeking out. Who wants to listen to that? Next week, we're here again, as we are every week, and next week we're doing dentistry. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.org. Coming up next is Open Road with Matt Pierce.
Santacruzelectronics.com.
I'm Lyle Troxell. Thanks for listening.